This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Final hour, VSiN Prime Time here on the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown, Mark Melusis, as we head into what I consider to be the most difficult division in all of football. You can argue with me if you want to out there, people. I'm okay with that. I do not claim to know it all. I just think that if you look at Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota, and Chicago, there's a lot of wins amongst those teams, and there's a lot of good players. And certainly we just talked about Chicago and everything they did in the offseason to try and make that team better around Caleb Williams, and Caleb Williams has to go and prove it. I think the next biggest question mark in this division starts in Minnesota, and Mark, it is because J.J. McCarthy has not taken a real NFL snap yet, and yet you're looking at a team with a 9-win total. We know the coaching staff is good. We know Justin Jefferson might be one of 1B, maybe, to his former teammate in Ja'Marr Chase as far as receivers in the NFL, but we still don't exactly know what McCarthy's going to look like. I do trust Kevin O'Connell. He was in line to start for the Vikings last year, and I can only assume if he wasn't any good, they wouldn't have started him. They'd have sat him, and then they'd have eventually gone to him, so I do believe that this coaching staff is smart and they were probably doing the right thing. That being said, I've not seen it with my own eyes, and it is a win total where they would have to get to above 500 in order to clear it.
Yeah, so, you know, not everybody can win. Like, you're going to look at this division, is there going to be any sort of regression? And I think it's more of a belief in O'Connell than it is in anything else, like, because we've seen it, right? We've seen it with multiple different quarterbacks, his ability as a head coach, at least offensively, to get the best out of those individuals, right? The revitalization of Sam Darnold a year ago, you know, the fact that they believed in J.J. McCarthy before he suffered the knee injury during training camp and then had a completely lost season, that they think he's going to be able to take advantage and play within this system. So listen, I think it's a roll of the dice. I mean, Matt, like I can't tell you, like, I like McCarthy at Michigan. Do I know what he's going to be in the National Football League? Nobody has any idea completely what he is going to be when the NFL games are played for real week one for the Minnesota Vikings. I think if you believe in Minnesota, you believe in this staff. And I think they've given you every right to believe in them, that they're really good at putting their players in a position to be successful. And they're really good. And O'Connell might be the best in the National Football League in terms of the modern era. Peyton deserves a ton of credit. Harbaugh out in Los Angeles with the Chargers. But, you know, working with quarterbacks and getting the best out of those individuals, because we've seen him do it with multiple individuals.
I mean, you look and it's kind of like what we were talking about with Caleb Williams. And if you're going to try to put a guy in a situation to succeed, well, start at the offensive line. He's got a couple of stud tackles. They go out and they draft Jackson. He should step in and play very well. I mean, they've got a really good, stout starting five. And then you look with Jefferson complemented by Addison. Then you have Hockenson as well and Jones at running back. It is a foundation, at least for McCarthy, for success. And of course, Jefferson can make a lot of people look very, very good. And I believe in Kevin O'Connell as well. Like, I don't think this number is crazy, and I know that we haven't seen it with our own eyes, and McCarthy could go out there and stink, but if he was going to start last year, they saw something there, Mark, you know, and I don't think that this is an organization and a coaching staff that just because they took him in the draft where they did, that they felt pressured that they had to start him immediately, and so
no, I think they really liked him.
Yeah, I'm going to trust in the fact that they actually liked him, and that's what we're dealing with here, and I think it's fair. I just don't know what to do here with an 8.5 win total. Do you think that this is an above 500 team, or it's kind of like you said, I mean, there's only so many wins, right, in a season,
Well, that's the issue you have. So like if you think Chicago can go over 8.5, well, there's going to be regressions. One of these teams, like not every, I don't think we're going to have a division where every team finishes above 500. Right. Mm. So you're going to have a scenario here where there's going to be a regression somewhere, or it's one team that you have expectations for takes a little bit of a step back. So could I see, I think the team that people are going to point to because of the uncertainty with the quarterback would be McCarthy more than anything else. Or the other team that people would point to would be the Green Bay Packers because of a lack of belief, say, in Jordan Love. You know, I think that's kind of where we stand in this division. So I agree with you. I don't know. To me, it's a stay away. I don't know what to do with Minnesota. I'm not good. I like McCarthy in Michigan. I trust O'Connell as a head coach and a kind of a quarterback guru. However, it's an unknown quantity. And to me, it's hard to invest in an unknown quantity.
Yeah. I really wish the win total was like 7.5 instead of 8.5.
Yes.
You know, that would be, I would feel much more comfortable. It would be like, hey, okay, a game under 500, I get it. You know, whatever, McCarthy's first season, yada, yada, yada. Like, I could get down with a 7.5. The 8.5 is really just, and I know it's only one win, but the 8.5 really just puts it kind of in the unplayable territory for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a stay away. I agree. At 7.5, it's a completely different look than, say, 8.5, because to get to 9 wins, you're going 9-8 during the regular season. You're expecting the McCarthy to be really, pretty good, very good to win a very ultra competitive division. He's got weapons around him. Here's the thing, like you mentioned about the comparison to Caleb Williams, like there's nothing that he doesn't have at his disposal offensively up there in Minnesota. And he's playing his games, his home games in a dome.
So we have the Green Bay Packers, in which we talked MVP a little bit earlier. You said, hey, if you went down the board, you might be looking at Jordan Love, 25-ish to 1 out there. Of course, shop around as always. Packers plus 260 in the division to win it. And the closest, at least by the odds, to compete with the Lions for the division. What do you think is the ceiling for this Packers team? Is it winning the division? Is it taking down the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's that possibility. And I kind of like him to do that. I think there's going to be a little regression in Detroit. And I love Campbell. I do. The offensive line, losing the coordinators, I think is a little bit of a concern. And they had everything in the regular season went their way a year ago. I think when you look at the Green Bay Packers, Love wasn't as good as he was 2 years ago, right? Where they had that tough luck loss in San Francisco playoff game 49ers. I could see the Green Bay Packers then taking a couple steps forward this year. I think they're going to be able to run it. I liked what they did in the NFL draft in terms of addressing the wide receiver position.
Right.
I think the offensive line is good enough. And I think the defensive coordinator year two, I think he's going to be better than he was year one. So if you're bullet or if you think Jordan Love is that caliber of a quarterback, I think the Green Bay Packers this year, I would take him over the win total at 9.5. And I would take him at plus 260 to win the division.
It is the team that I am the most, absolutely the most confused about. Like I watch games where Jordan Love plays and I go, how's this guy like not a top five like week in, week out quarterback in the NFL. And then I watch other ones where I go like, oh, this guy's never mind. He's a bottom five quarterback in the NFL. Like some of the decisions and stuff that he makes. And I don't know. This team is the most confusing team in the NFL for me. I have no idea what to do with them, which is why this division is so incredibly tough for me, because I honestly think at the end of the day, if any one of these four teams won the division, I would not be shocked. I really wouldn't be shocked. That said, it is the Lions division to lose here, Mark, and they are still returning. The vast majority of their dudes are going to be getting some people back as well. Are we underselling maybe this Lions team?
Maybe we are. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, but then are we underselling the impact of Ben Johnson as a play caller? Like, are we underselling that? Like, is that just, you know, that doesn't really factor in or that doesn't matter, right? To orchestrate, put together a game plan, you know, the revitalization of Jordan, of Jared Goff, the, you know, what he's been able to do offensively. And listen, they've got, there's nothing not to like when you look at Jamison Williams, when you look at Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown. There's playmakers all over the place on the Detroit Lions offensively. Sam Laporta, I think, you know, had some injury issues a year ago. I think he'll go back to the, the receiving threat that he was year one as a rookie tight end, where he was a revelation in the National Football League and they had high expectations for him. Getting Hutchinson back defensively, I just get a little bit concerned, Matt, when I look at losing both coordinators and the impact that there is. Like, did the Philadelphia Eagles look the same after they lost both coordinators? They didn't. Right. And I'm not telling you that it's going to be that bad, but I think there could be a possibility when you look at the Lions in 2025 where there might be a little bit of a slight regression, even though their roster is still really, really good.
Yeah, I don't think I can get there on betting them really in any in any fashion. And it's weird for me to say. I was a big, big fan last year, had a ton of money invested in the Lions last year, but there is a little bit of unknown for me here in this one. So I think this division, almost in general, outside of maybe some Bears love, some sort of way to play the Bears, is going to be off limits for me. So kind of is what it is. Mark, as we head out of here in the last minute, we have the news that DeAndre Ayton is going to sign with the Lakers on a 2-year deal. Yeah. They need a center very, very badly. Everyone was pointing to this was most likely going to happen, though I guess Indiana was at least in the discussion with Turner leaving. Does this move the needle for you at all? I mean, Ayton was pretty solid at the end of last season.
Yeah, he was, and he wanted a winning situation. I guess his attitude in Portland was terrible, too. So now J.J. Redick's really got his work cut out for him, right? So he's got to make sure Luka's in shape. You know, LeBron's trying to see exactly what he can orchestrate to make sure this is a win-now situation. It's not building for Luka in the future. And now you throw DeAndre Ayton in the mix, who is a good offensive player. The problem is with Ayton is, you know, he averaged less than a block a game, as a 7-footer last year for the Portland Trailblazers. So is he necessarily going to improve their defense? No. Do they get him on the cheap? They do. Does that better option than what was out there at the center position for the Lakers? Yeah, unquestionably it was. But does it necessarily move the needle in terms of putting them, with Denver, Oklahoma City in the Western Conference? It doesn't for me.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I think it's like you're playing for like the third or fourth seed, right? I mean, that's
right.
Yeah.
Are you going to take the Lakers or the Rockets right now? Yeah. Like I take the Houston Rockets right now.
It's kind of like, seems to me like they're just kind of trying to battle for the third or fourth seed or something like that. You know, you're not going to be one or two, but you know, at least they didn't sit on their hands in LeBron. What could be true. LeBron's final season in all of this NFC West when we come back.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN Primetime here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown, Mark Melusis. Appreciate you guys being with us for the last 3 hours and 15 minutes, 45 left to go. As Clayton Kershaw is on the hill in his quest for 3,000 strikeouts, that said, he's giving up a triple. Sort of guy on third. As we sit right now. So we will see if we can get to those three strikeouts. Again, his prop was just 4.5. So the books didn't think he was going to blow this away or anything. 4.5, the strikeout prop for Clayton Kershaw in this game against one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, the 28-57 Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, that's where we're at. And the Jays have forged ahead of the Yankees once again, 11-9. In the top half of the ninth inning, the Yankees have one man on, Ben Rice up at the plate, facing a 1-2 count against Hoffman, the closer for the Jays.
So we did get home just barely. So we'll have a 2-1 night here on the program. Brown does get the 7th strikeout just in time, 91 pitches for him, Mark. So had he not gotten there, I think that we were going to fall 1 strikeout short, but he did get it done for us. That said, they are tied top of the 6th here with Colorado. So no run support here for him in this one, 2-2 in the top of the 6th. And, again, five innings for Gomber, and he is done. So 5 innings for Gomber, 8 hits given up, but only the 2 earned runs, 1 strikeout. He only struck out 1 guy.
Just one.
And lasted the 5 innings and still only gave up 2 runs to this Astros squad.
But good on you. 2-1 night, you'll take it, man.
Yeah, I'll take it 2-1 night. If we could go 2-1 every single night, we'd be fine.
Oh, now, you're cooking with gas.
If we could go 2-1 every single night, it'd be great. We probably should have faded the Orioles, though, as we wanted to.
Yes.
We probably should have. 6-0, bottom of the 8th inning. They are just 4 hits in the game. They've also committed an error. Eovaldi goes 5 innings, only gives up 2 hits. I guess they're just being – maybe they're just being safe with Eovaldi. I don't know. I'll have to look on Twitter. I can't imagine that he got injured and we didn't see it or something. But only 72 pitches.
I didn't see anything.
Yeah, only 72 pitches for Eovaldi, and he was done after 5 there, Mark. So, I don't know, maybe they're just being conservative. They were up 6-0 in the game.
Yeah, maybe they were. Mm. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, that's where we go back to the conversation where we were talking about Kershaw, the way that pitchers are used nowadays as compared to the way they were used 15 or 20 years ago. Mm. I haven't seen anything on social media in terms of Eovaldi being hurt, but he only threw 72 pitches over five innings. But that's kind of a quality start in today's day and age of Major League Baseball.
It seems like it is, unfortunately. You got two in the top of the first there for San Francisco, so they are still up 2-0 over there on Arizona. We'll keep you guys updated on all of the games that are still in play. 5-3 Chicago over Cleveland as well, and then Kansas City at early 1-0 lead on Seattle. Oh, boy, they get the run across for against Clayton Kershaw here. So we're hoping he can get to three strikeouts in front of the home crowd, but he is down 1-0 here to the White Sox early on. All right, Mark, let's talk a little bit about this NFC West. And it is in a division that I have a polarizing opinion on. And 49ers, Rams, Cardinals, Seahawks, 10.5, 9.5, and both sitting here 8.5 wins on these teams. The 49ers at the top is a team that I played the under on the win total. And I understand the schedule is an absolute cupcake, and I do totally get it. But if you look last year, we still only had 9 teams get to 11 wins. And one of those came in week 18 in a game that didn't matter. So we kind of only had 8 teams get to 11 wins last year. And then I think we're making a lot of assumptions with this 49ers team, such as a 29-year-old Christian McCaffrey is just going to come in and look like Christian McCaffrey, yeah. That Brandon Ayuk is going to come off this major injury and still be able to be a wide receiver one, that all of these losses they have on the defensive side of the ball, that somehow Saleh is just going to be able to magically, you know, sprinkle some pixie dust and make these bad players good somehow. I don't know. Again, the 49ers, the schedule could get them to the playoffs and probably will get them to the playoffs. But I see all this stuff about, you know, Super Bowl champions and one seeds and this, that, and the other, and all this with this team. And I don't know, man, I'm a little bit skeptical that they're just going to magically look like the 49ers just because, oh, it's a new season.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. I mean, very, very similar take on this division, and very similar take on the San Francisco 49ers, so specifically the 49ers in general. I think they've suffered a massive amount of losses. Mm. To think that all of a sudden everything's going to be, even with the schedule, that everything's going to be A-OK. McCaffrey being healthy is going to help for sure, right? But, you know, you take Deebo Samuel out of the mix. You know, Purdy's obviously been paid. The defensive losses that they have suffered, you know, when San Francisco was really good, they were winning at the point of attack, offensive and defensive lines. Can you really sit here on this Wednesday night and make that same and have that same conversation wherever you might be about the San Francisco 49ers that they're going to win at the point of attack? I can't. I don't think anyone realistically can. And I think Saleh is going to be a good defensive coordinator. I think he's a great defensive coordinator. He's a terrible head coach. So you look at what San Francisco is here. The 49ers, and I know the schedule does help, but they're almost being treated like the 49ers from a couple years ago, which I don't think they are. And I think it's going to be one of those teams where, you know, Matt, you and I doing a show together, you know, 3-4 months from now, you know, I'm going to be patting you on the back saying great call on the San Francisco 49ers, because I think they're going to be one of the more disappointing teams here, especially when you look at the complexion of the NFC.
Yeah, it's just to me, I think Brock Purdy's fine, but I think we're also just assuming that he is one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. And yeah. I mean, it's a pretty small sample size for us to just assume that. He might just be league average or a little better than league average, which is fine. You'll still win games like that, but I don't know. I just can't get there with him. So obviously I have to like a team in this division, and that team that I love is the Rams. So I am a big, big, big Rams guy. I like them every which way but loose. I mean, I have Matt Stafford and MVP that we talked about a little bit earlier in the program. On paper, I think this team is absolutely fantastic. If the addition of Adams freeing up Nacua, you've got Williams at running back, you've got an awesome coach that and a quarterback that is bought in. He's been coming back. Matthew Stafford, when healthy, slings it still. I like the Rams a lot. I bet them to win the division. I bet they over on the win total. I like the Rams a decent amount here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I've liked the Rams ever since Stafford, you know, went out there and tested the market and got offers from the New York Giants and then ended up re-signing with the Los Angeles Rams. Arm is still there. He's got talent around him. He makes everyone around him better. Nacua is an absolute beast. Davante Adams is going to be, you know, a second, you know, second level, and is going to be able to untrack and make Nacua even that much more dangerous with the focus that he's going to get at the wide receiver position. You know, they lost Aaron Donald, you know, to retirement a year ago. Did that defense take a massive step back? No, they got better as the season went along. They just went out there and attacked a little bit differently with some smallish, undersized defensive tackles. So there's a lot to like, and I think there's a distinctive coaching advantage when you look at Sean McVay as well. So you and I are the same. You know, I like the Rams to win the division. I think they can win the NFC. I think potentially the Rams can go out there and potentially win the Super Bowl as well. I mean, I think, you know, all of that is on the table if you're a Rams fan looking at them right now.
Arizona Cardinals, a team that I know that are getting a little bit of buzz from people out there. I think they can only be better from last year. They underperformed so greatly last year and punted off a couple of wins. They had some wins that they just completely went and peed down their leg. And so, like, I look here at a team with decent amount of talent on the offensive side. You have to think Harrison's going to play a little bit better. He was pretty underwhelming in his rookie season, and then did some nice addition on the defensive side of the ball as well. That win total sitting at 8.5 lets you know that is pretty respected here. This team is, you know, projected to be about 500, a little over 500. What is your take here on the Cardinals as we head into the season?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Kyler Murray fan. You know, I'm just not, you know, Matt. And I have a hard time taking them over 8.5 in this division, even say with a regression of the 49ers. You know, I think Sam Darnold in Seattle could work. I think there's going to be a team that takes a little bit of a step back. I like their head coach. I do. I'm not a huge fan of Kyler Murray. Loved him at Oklahoma. I know he flashes. I know he's had moments. Harrison, I think, will be better year two than he was. Harrison will be better year two than he was year one. I'm just I would go under 8.5 if I were looking to look at this market for Arizona.
That'll be interesting, because if going to go under, then we're going to I'm interested in your opinion when we come back on Seattle, because if we're going to go under on the Cardinals, those wins got to go somewhere. I do think that McBride is probably one of the better tight end, at least receiving tight ends in the NFL. Connor, for whatever reason, is still productive as well. It really can come down. Can Harrison take a step there on the offensive side of the ball? And is there anybody that can actually be a wide receiver too? Because if that's not going to be the case, then they're not going to be able to have success on a consistent basis. So it's an interesting team to me, but not a team. If I'm as high on the Rams, I certainly can't be like super high on them as well. When we come back, we will talk to Seattle Seahawks, see what's going on with that. We'll be on Clayton Kershaw watch. Did he get any strikeouts? How close is he to getting to 3,000 tonight in front of the home crowd? And, of course, we still have the NFC South to go as well. It's primetime here on VSiN.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN Primetime, Matt Mark here with you for another half an hour as we watch Clayton Kershaw try to get to 3,000 strikeouts. We were looking at the active list, wondering if we will ever see it again. He gives up a run in the top of the first, but they answer in the bottom of the first, a home run by Will Smith. So it is 1-1 in the bottom of the first there. But he did finish the first inning without a strikeout and gave up 3 hits, actually, there in the top of the first inning. I don't think the pressure's getting to him, Mark, as much as it is the fact that he throws 89 miles an hour now.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it, right? So he's no longer has the same stuff that he once did, and getting through it, like, you know, with a little guts and guile at times and keeping hitters off balance. So, you know, I hope, just for, you know, kind of the romanticism of Major League Baseball and sports, that he's able to do it at home. That would be awesome for Kershaw to be able to get it. But sometimes it doesn't necessarily work out that way. And as the Dodgers always do, you expect them to respond. The White Sox stink. I mean, they're really an embarrassment to baseball. So hopefully Kershaw is able to get to those 3 strikeouts. But Obviously, we've seen some strange things in Major League Baseball tonight, Matt.
We have seen some ridiculous innings here in Major League Baseball tonight. None in this one, however, as we are still sitting 5-3 in favor of the Cubs over the Guardians. We talked about Bibee didn't get very far into this one. He only goes four innings because in those four innings, he threw 96 pitches. He gave up six hits and walked four while also striking out five. So that's how you rack up 96 pitches in four innings. That said, Allard has relieved him and has not given up a run to this Cubs team. Imanaga makes it 5 1/3. He gives up four hits, three of which left the yard. Presley came in and got him out of that inning. And so here we sit 5-3, top of the eighth, currently Cleveland threatening with two men on and one out. We are in the sixth inning. Was tied for a while. It is now 5-2 in favor of the Astros in the bottom of the sixth inning. So Astros do go out in the sixth and get a three spot. So break that 2-2 tie. And I thought Brown would be done for sure at 91 pitches, but they brought him back out. So he's out on the hill right now for them in the bottom of the sixth inning. So we'll see how long he lasts there in that one. You got yourself two in the top of the first there, Mark, and that's where we sit still. 2-0 in favor of San Francisco on the road over Arizona. Mark gave out San Francisco as underdog, so hopefully that will hold for the rest of this one. Kansas City, a 1-0 lead early on there against Seattle. Noah Cameron just continues three innings for him. He's given up two hits, hasn't walked any, struck out three against this Mariners team. This Cameron kid just continues to dazzle. Gilbert, three innings, two hits given up. He's K'd four, but he walked a couple. And so when you walk a couple and you give up a hit, that's how you get behind 1-0. So a few games still left for us to sweat here over the last half hour, Mark.
Yeah, good pitching matchup in that Seattle-Kansas City one. You mentioned Cameron and obviously Gilbert on the mound for the Seattle Mariners. And Cameron's been really good this year, pitching that 2.63 ERA. He's got the 38 strikeouts, but continues to impress. And a good start to his appearance tonight with the three innings and only allowing two hits and no runs. He's got three Ks on the night so far.
Seattle Seahawks, and this was the last team in the division that we did not get to talk about. Of course, we know Sam Darnold signed. He will be the starting quarterback as Geno Smith heads to Las Vegas. Ken Walker at running back. Smith and Jigba is your wide receiver. DK Metcalf is also out of town, but they signed Cooper Kupp. Is there anything left in the tank for Cooper Kupp? We will find out. Some spots along the offensive line that certainly don't look great. Going to need to shore up the right tackle, right guard position. No doubt about that. The center position, a little bit below league average as well. Marquez Valdez-Scantling will also be on there, filling out the wide receiver three position for them. Some decent talent on the defensive side of the ball. Win total set at 8.5 here, Mark. A +150 for them to make the playoffs. What do you think about Seattle?
Yeah, so if I'm going to go under San Francisco or fade the 49ers, and I'm not a huge Kyler Murray or Arizona Cardinal fan, then where does it have to go? I think it goes to Seattle. I like Mike McDonald's as second-year head coach. It concerns, you're right, along the offensive line. Not going to doubt that. I think Cooper Kupp is a secondary guy to Jackson Smith and Jigba works. Walker never stays healthy, but I do like their backup in Zach Charbonnet, the former UCLA Bruin. And then you look at the adjustments they've made on defense. Murphy, a young, gifted interior defensive lineman, bringing in DeMarcus Lawrence. I think the secondary is good enough. And I think Sam Darnold, the question you have about this is what you saw last year with Sam Darnold. Is he going to be not necessarily nearly as good, but just as proficient if you like Seattle and the over. And I think Darnold found something a little bit last year with the Minnesota Vikings, or a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I think he has a tendency where he could continue that this year with the Seattle Seahawks. And I'm going to take the over 8.5 with Seattle.
Yeah, it is. I kind of think what we saw from Darnold was real last year. And, people forget when he came into the league, he was like 12 years old. And so it was like, he was so incredibly young that thrown into that situation, I'm not saying it was a absolute no win situation, but it was certainly a bad situation for him. And the change of scenery, getting a little bit of talent around him certainly helps as well. And then you look at what he's got here. I mean, Smith and Jigba, I think, is a very good receiver. I think Cooper Kupp now not having to be a number one can be a number two, like you said, is a pretty good situation. I don't know what MVS still has left in the tank. You know, they might need to find a wide receiver three somewhere along the way. But yeah, I think that I think that this team, kind of like we were talking about with Vegas, I think this team's not going to be an easy out. I think this is going to be one of those teams that really week in, week out battles with some people. And as long as that offensive line doesn't completely fail Sam Darnold, then I think they're going to win some games that maybe that people think they're not supposed to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Difficult place to play. I mean, mm-hmm. they clearly have a home field advantage when you look at it. And I agree. Like, we talked about the Vegas Raiders a little bit earlier on the show, and their quarterback is Geno Smith. How long did it take Geno to finally find it? Mm-hmm. And it's a good call when you look at Sam Darnold. It was a disaster with the Jets, right? And finally he landed a position, you know, after spending some time on the bench in San Francisco as a backup quarterback out in Minnesota, and took advantage of that opportunity and maybe he can build upon. And I think the Seattle thinks he can build upon the success and the confidence they built last year with the Minnesota Vikings, where he does have weapons. Now, listen, does he have Justin Jefferson? No, I like Jackson Smith and Jigba. A breakthrough year a season ago. Is he Justin Jefferson? He's not on that level as a wide receiver, but there are other components to this team. The concern that you'd have is the thing that you hit upon, Matt, is the offensive line. Like, that's the issue that we saw when it became a problem in Minnesota. You saw Darnold kind of regress to similar mistakes and holding out to the football a little bit too long, being turnover prone, all of those things. That's the one thing with Darnold is that if you don't protect him, you're going to see a depreciated asset. And that's going to be a key for the Seattle Seahawks this year.
We will, of course, talk about the NFC South as well here in the next segment. Mark, real quick, because I don't want to completely ignore that it's been NBA free agency, all the crazy stuff going on and things that are happening out there, what it's done to the odds that are out there. The Thunder are plus 225 to win it all. The Rockets all the way to 7-1. So that's the gap here between the favorite to win it all and the next closest shot. Is there any team out there that with what they did intrigues you and makes you at least wonder about what the upside might be for them?
Well, I think everyone's trying to like look east. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what the Atlanta Hawks have done has been really, really intriguing, right? I think Milwaukee is trying to do everything they can to prevent Giannis from trying to leave the Milwaukee Bucks, right? The Celtics are going to take a step back. No Tatum, Halliburton out. They lost their center as well to Milwaukee. So Miles Turner. I like it what Atlanta's done this offseason. If Embiid can stay healthy, I like the three guards that the Philadelphia 76ers have. And listen, I don't think we kicked it. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. I think it's more of a sidestep kind of a move. I don't think it's a significant upgrade at head coach. Maybe they need to change the voice. I like what the Knicks did to address their bench in the Eastern Conference. Now, do I put the Knicks on the level of Oklahoma City? No, I don't. I think the Thunder, and now that we've come to know that Jalen Williams was playing with a wrist injury or a torn ligament, I should say, in his wrist, and still went out there and gutted through it. And the Thunder are just going to get better off this past year's experience. So SGA signing that experience, they'd sign that extension. They have every right to be the favorite that they are. Is there anybody else that intrigues me in the Eastern Conference? The team that would intrigue me the most, but they've got a big question at coach with Mike Brown, would be the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I like looking east as well. I don't think you want to mess with the West right now. I mean, the Cavs still sitting there at 8.5. They were one of the better teams all season long, you know.
No doubt.
You're getting nearly 9-1 on them to win it all. Guys, you heard us talk about the trifecta from GBank. It is it's from us, GBank and First Bet. Open a Visa signature card over there at GBank in the first 90 days. Play through 1,000 at First Bet. That'll trigger the $500 trifecta. $200 in cash back on that Visa signature card. You'll also get a $100 deposit match at First Bet, and then we will give you a Visa Pro subscription as well to round out the trifecta. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That is VSIN.com/G, BANK, to get in on this. It's a one-time promotion limited to new customers, and you cannot convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply.
Hey. This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final segment, VSiN Primetime here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown, Mark Malus is going to take you home. And Mark, I think the story of the evening, Yankees fall behind 8-0, come all the way back, tie it at 9 on a Judge two-run homer, only to lose 11-9. And by the way, are now tied with the Blue Jays in the AL East. Yes, the Toronto Blue Jays are tied for first place with the New York Yankees after tonight.
Yeah, terrible. Devin Williams giving it up. The Yankees have this unbelievable rally, and still yet they lose. I mean, and Williams was a guy that they had in the offseason from the Milwaukee Brewers, was dominant, lost his closer's role earlier on in the regular season when he was non-competitive. Luke Weaver then gets hurt. He reassumes the closer's role. And tonight, the Yankees have this unbelievable night. Judge has a great moment. It's a nine. And give Toronto credit. That would have been a gut-wrenching loss, Matt. I mean, that would have been a one where if you're a Blue Jay fan, you would have a hard night sleeping. Or if you back the Blue Jays tonight, hard night sleeping, leading that game 8-0. All of a sudden, that game's tied up 9-9, and you end up losing it. So give Toronto credit for winning it, but that is a to come all the way back to tie it up at 9 and then end up losing it. And Devin Williams giving up, tough loss for the Yanks.
The other thing we're monitoring here tonight, Clayton Kershaw trying to go for 3,000 strikeouts. He's out on the hill in the top of the third. He has 0 through 2 innings, just gave up a leadoff single as well. And he's thrown 42 pitches already, given up 4 hits in this thing. We'd like to see him get it done in front of the home crowd, but boy, it is throwing balloons up there right now. I mean, like, I hadn't played baseball in 25 years. I'm kind of like, I might could give this a whirl. I might could
get
I mean, throwing about 88, 89.
He's throwing the ball 74, 75 miles an hour. I mean, he's throwing like wiffle balls, as you were mentioning, we were talking about during the course of the break. Yeah, he doesn't listen. This is not prototypical Kershaw stuff. I mean, and unfortunately, he's at the end of his career. You'd like to see him have that moment at home. The Dodgers were favored tonight because it was the dreadful White Sox, like it was prime Clayton Kershaw, but that's not what you get. And when he doesn't have his A-plus stuff at this stage of his career, he really doesn't have his A-plus stuff.
The NFC South, or the worst division in football, however you want to look at it, is here. Buccaneers, Falcons, Panthers, and Saints. The Bucs are your favored team in that division. 9.5 their win total. Falcons, 7.5. Panthers, 6.5. Saints at 6.5 as well. Mark, I have a bet in on the Saints to be the worst team in the NFL, to have the worst record in the NFL. I look at this Saints team in which, if they were smart, they probably just hit the reset button, start moving off some of these older talents, see what they can get for it, and just understand this team has nothing. But I don't know if they're going to do it or not, but I have the bets in for them to be the worst team in the NFL. I also have a bet in on the Falcons to win this division. And mainly it's just, I'm looking at the variance of the Bucs and the age that they have. And yes, they lost Godwin last year, but outside of that, they ran pretty pure from an injury standpoint for a team that is the oldest team in the NFL. And I'm just not going to say that it's going to happen yet again. The NFL is very tough on a body, and I don't know if that's going to be the case again for them. So I took a shot at 250 on the Falcons. I don't love it, but I don't hate it either.
Yeah, that would be my only play in the division would be Atlanta. You know, I agree with you about that's a good point. I didn't really think about the health factor for Tampa staying relatively healthy outside of Chris Godwin. But that's a fair factor when you're looking at this division. But I look at Atlanta and I like a lot of what they have. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact of what they addressed in the NFL draft and in free agency. Now, they couldn't get after the quarterback. What'd they do? They addressed that during the course of the offseason. Do I love Raheem Morris as a head coach? Not necessarily. But I do think when you look at Bijan Robinson, I'm a big Michael Penix fan. I know he had injury woes at Indiana and Washington, but still, if he can go out there and stay healthy, there's no doubt that he can go spin it. And like Drake London, even though he does have great speed, I think he's a very good receiver in the National Football League when he's on the field. I agree with you. At plus 250, I would take a swing at the Atlanta Falcons to win the NFC South.
Yeah, it's just, I think the Saints are going to be terrible. I think the Panthers are at least interesting if Bryce Young is actually the Bryce Young that closed out the season last year, and he's not the Bryce Young that began the season last year. But he certainly looked like a different quarterback to me after he got benched, Mark. It seemed like maybe the pressure was off of his shoulders. He came out there, played a lot more loose, and looked like the guy that at least – now, he's never – I don't think he's ever going to be elite, but he certainly looked like a guy that could be a competent starter in the NFL. And so – That said, I'm not sure that there's enough talent there quite yet for him to elevate this team to a division winner. So I kind of looked at it as a head-to-head between the Falcons and the Bucks. And so if you're going to give me over 2.5 to 1 on one of the teams where I don't see a ton of separation between the two, that was kind of the thought here. And honestly, if you look at this, I mean, we're talking if you believe in PFF grades and all of that, I mean, both tackle positions graded out well for the Falcons. You have a guard position, both guard positions graded out. One, Lindstrom was the number one guard graded in the entire NFL last season as well. So, I mean, Bijan Robinson, of course, a playmaker too. So it was just kind of a shot here on a head-to-head, in my opinion, a head-to-head, where I'm getting over 2.5 to 1 on a team that I don't think is all that different from the other team.
Well, I think it's a fair assessment because we've gone through each and every division tonight, right? Mm. But this is one where it's really a two-horse race, and it's really either Tampa or Atlanta. Like, you can't make a, you know, Tyler Shuck probably going to be the starting quarterback down in New Orleans, and I agree with you. I think they're going to be dreadful, and they might end up being the worst team in the NFL, Matt, and you might cash on that ticket. And then you look at Carolina, and you look at the Panthers, and I give Young a lot of credit. It shows you the length of the NFL regular season, because at the start of the year, everyone was ripping Carolina, thinking that Bryce Young was going to go someplace else, or how do you know, and everyone was diminutive quarterback and all the negatives that you saw. And then at the end of the season, all of a sudden, like a light bulb switched on, and Bryce Young figured it out, right? And he played really, really well toward the tail end of the year. Give him credit. Can he build upon that? Even with all that being said, there's still a great talent disparity between Carolina and Atlanta and Tampa. And I think if the Falcons, if certain things improve, play at the quarterback position, Bijan Robinson's a hell of a playmaker at the running back spot. Defensively, if 80% of what they did in the offseason goes to the positive, or 60% goes to the positive, I think the Falcons are going to be a team that's going to be competitive with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and can win the South.
Man, Kershaw is getting lit up.
Oh, what's the score now?
He just gave up a 2-run shot. I think another guy scored or whatever. He is just getting, he's getting lit up out there. He is 2 1/3. He's given up 6 hits already. Yeah. Oh boy.
He's thrown 55 pitches in 2 1/3 innings of work.
Yeah. So this is, I want him to get there. He does at least have 1K. He does at least have 1K.
Strikeout. So he's 2 away. He's 2 away. How long do you think Roberts?
I was about to say, listen, do you just leave him out? I mean, you're 54 and 32. Do you just leave him out there until he gets it?
Well, yeah, how long does Roberts go? It's now a 4-2 game, 1 out in the top of the third. The White Sox have a man on first. He's got absolutely nothing.
Yeah, 7 like hits already in 2 1/3.
7 hits in 2 1/3. How long does Dave Roberts allow him to potentially have this moment?
This is going to be very interesting, because there comes a point where you have to go, do we go save him, you know, air quote save him, because you don't want him to get embarrassed either, right? I mean, I know he wants to get it in front of the home crowd and all that tonight, and everyone made such a big deal out of it.
What's the point of getting your 3,000 strikeout if it's like a 6-2 game and you're losing?
To the White Sox, no less, right? That's the other thing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's to the White terrible. Sox. Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, he just reared back and threw in as hard as he could, and it was 89. I mean, like, he can't break 90 anymore.
No, he doesn't have it.
Well,
he doesn't have it, but I mean, he's still got the Dodgers. It doesn't matter. Like, I've come to the conclusion, Matt, it doesn't matter how many injuries the Dodgers have, who they lose in their starting rotation, how many pitchers on the IL. All they do is continue to win. Maybe not tonight against Chicago, but all they do is win.
Mark, we've gone through each one of these divisions. Who do you have one in the AFC? Who do you have one in the NFC? And who do you have one in it all?
In the AFC, I have Baltimore. NFC, I have the Green Bay Packers, and then I have Lamar Jackson and the Ravens winning the Super Bowl.
Well, I had the Ravens as well coming out. I went ahead and just kept back in the Eagles and have the Eagles going back to back. I know it's incredibly difficult to go back to back. I get it. I just look at this team and it's just very hard for me to find any holes with this Eagles team, but I fully get it. Hey, the Packers would be the team to kind of come on the up and up for sure. Mark, it's been a pleasure, my man.
Matt, it's been great, man. Thanks for having me. You've been, it's been a blast doing the last 4 hours with you.
Absolutely, guys. Hopefully, I got some bets into your account here in the NFL as well. Stick around for Greg and cashing out. And of course, tomorrow morning, Dave and Jensen will be in here as well. Good luck on all your bets.